Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. In April, the Spectrum Millionaire Investor Confidence Index was up 6 points from March. Where is your confidence level today? If you'd like to consider bringing in some support, take a look at the family of investing programs from KPP Financial. They're there for you to see when you want on investtalk.com. Click on the Investments tab. End of commercial. And now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. It is Monday, May 9th, 2016, and I appreciate you being with me. We're here to start a fresh new week. Invest Talk is all about enabling the average investor to realize better than average results. That's our goal. And this goes whether you're managing your own money or you work with a professional. I don't care. We work to turn the possibility of growing your money into a probability. Possibility into a probability. Even in a falling market, better than average means not falling with the market, not falling as much. Maybe you'll go down, but you won't go down as much. It's key. It's extremely important to try to hold on to gains. And you're not always successful, and you're not trying to time the market. That's not really what it's about. It's just trying to take advantage of situations in the marketplace. And you know, there's things you can do to protect yourself. Now, in a rising market, of course, better than average means you want to do better than average. That's also difficult. Don't think it's simple. These are not, you know, it sounds simple, but it's not. It takes a lot of work. Now, whether you invest directly or individual stocks or through employer plan or some other program, it doesn't matter, IRAs, Roth IRAs, the effort is to try that we make here is to try to deepen your understanding of how the money marketplace works. It's trying a straightforward discussion about how and why things go up and down. I mean, long term, it's really, really, really simple. Stocks go up in price if they make more and more and more money. It will eventually go up in price. Doesn't go up perfectly, though. Just because it makes money and money this year doesn't mean the stock price will go up this year. But if it makes money, more money this year, and then more money next year, and then more money the next year after that, eventually that stock price, investors are going to recognize that consistency and go up. It's just, it's one of the most reliable things that you as an individual can rely on. Now, let me plug my book a little bit because I really think it can help you. I really think my book can help you. It's called Better Than Average Investing for the Average Investor. And it walks through basic concepts, terms, basic fundamentals, and basic charting patterns. It's not advanced. It's beginner. But it will help you get a good foundation. I sincerely believe that every investor should expect better than average results. What you need is accurate information and a balanced perspective. And it's key to making better decisions, those things. Information and perspective. You know, try to step back from the craziness of bubbles and crowds and what's going on, you know, that this is does things can't be sustainable. Don't get hyped up about everybody else talking about a certain investment and everybody's so excited about it and you jump in with them. That's not how you're going to be better than average. Okay, you can see more about my book and go to investtalk.com. You can order it on investtalk.com. Just click on the investment tab, invest talk tab, I should say. There are many other books listed there as well that are really good. Today, we've got 5 tips for getting started with ETFs, exchange-traded funds. You heard of me talking about them in the past few weeks. I'm talking about for a while now. Maybe you're not clear on how they work or how they compare with mutual funds. Which ones to choose, how to buy and sell them. And that's going to be one of our talking points today, by the way. But as always, I'm counting on you to set the agenda for the program, not me. We want to answer your questions, not things I think you should be listening to, even though I will bring them up. I will talk about them. But you are the one that drives the program. So give me a call. Maybe you want to talk about analytical tools that are available to you to analyze things. You have questions maybe about reverse mortgages. How much money do you need to begin investing in individual stocks? Because there is a certain amount. So I want to hear your questions. So let's check in now with our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHARGE, our anytime number.
Hi, this is John from Walnut Creek. I have a question. When selecting a financial advisor, how important is it that they have audited track records? And who is the auditor that performs these audits? And how often do they occur or should they occur? Thank you very much. I enjoy your show.
Almost all financial advisors, registered investment advisors, will not have financial audited financials. Those are the terms used by mutual funds, and they, of course, will want you to have audited financials because they're required to have audited financials. And the reason being is a mutual fund is just one fund. Each of their fund, you know, whatever it is just one. They can have hundreds or thousands of investors in that one fund. And they, all they had to do is audit the financials of the fund. As a registered investment advisor, which I am one, or other types of investment advisors, they have to, if they're going to have audited financials, each individual account that they have, each person they have under management, has to be audited individually. I have 200, 300 clients. Do you know how much that would cost to have every client's account audited? So it's not critical. You're not going to get it from people like me, and that's one of the reasons why I tell people I buy the exact same things for myself as I do for my clients at the exact same price, exact same time, exact same percentages, because then they know that I'm doing the same thing, and I prove it when I meet with people. I'll show them that that's what I'm doing. So I prove it. And at least you know that I'm doing the same thing everybody else. And, of course, do I want to make money with my money? And not just with a little bit of my money, all my money. Not with a little bit. You know, anybody can do a little bit. It's all of my money, all of my various programs. So it's not that critical. But you do want to know, you know, what is the person's goal? What kind of investor is he? How much risk does he take, he or she? How they get paid? That's very important, how someone gets paid. Do they sell you loaded funds? Are they buying only mutual funds? Is that the only program they have? Because those are expensive. I mean, no matter what anybody says, they're expensive, especially if they're loaded. They're very expensive. Loaded meaning paying commissions to the person selling them. So, yeah, there's certain things you want to know. Having audited financials, it's nice, but you're not going to get that from an investment advisor. You're just not. You can get it from mutual funds, and that's about it. Five tips for getting started with ETFs. That's our main talking point today. Also, I want to talk about a very interesting sell signal. How strong it is, well, I'm going to let you decide. It's only happened 2 times in 20 years. So I'll let you decide that. Does the stock market guide the Federal Reserve policy? Does the stock market guide their policy? We'll have a nice discussion about that. Income investments other than dividend stocks. I'm going to list a number of them, most of them really. Income investments other than dividend stocks. And briefly talk about the, I have 9 of them, and briefly talk about the pros and cons about them. Okay, that's what we're going to discuss today, unless you want to talk about something else. The market today, the Dow is down 35, the NASDAQ up 14, and S&P up 2. Kind of a mixed day. You remember we had an up day ending the last hour or so of the market on Friday. The market moved up. Today it's just kind of meandering sideways. The earnings season is coming to a close for the first quarter, and it hasn't been very good. It's been what pretty much the expectations were for it not to be very good, even though if you listen to the people tracking stocks and they're telling you they're beating estimates, well, that's wonderful, but that's their estimates that they've ratcheted down all first quarter, and the estimates are way lower than they were a quarter before that and a quarter before that. This is the third quarter in a row where the earnings have gone down. Fourth quarter in a row where sales have gone down. That's what needs to change for this market to get off the dime. The darn market hasn't done a darn thing in over a year? Well over a year. All last year and this year. Now, it peaked in May, but that peak was very mild. But it still hasn't gotten, you know, from the year last year, it hasn't really gotten to the highs from the beginning of last year to the beginning to right today. It's pretty much where it was then. Just not very good. So you're listening to Invest Talk. I invite you to join in on Invest Talk Insiders. Today we published our economic forecast for May. It's there for all insiders. Sign up for free on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. If you have a question or want to share your investing experiences, why not do it now? I welcome your call, 888-99-CHART.
This is Barbara in Texas. I'm looking at Intel, INTC. It's dropped quite a bit in the last few days. I was wondering what you could tell me about it. Love the show. Bye-bye.
Sure, Intel Corporation manufactures microprocessors, chipsets, network processors, non-volatile memory, and storage for computing markets. If you don't know who Intel is, you probably live in a cave somewhere. It's a huge blue-chip stock, $140 billion in market cap, pays a very nice dividend, 3.5%. It's a blue-chip stock now. That's what it is. Makes $2.42 this year. That's 2 cents more than last year. Not much of an increase. And the next year is supposed to go up about 9% to 264. Sales are slowly increasing, 1% to 7% the last few quarters. If you go back even a year, 2 years, 1% to 7% has been its growth rate, and that's about what it's going to be. Don't expect a huge, not a lot of that, don't expect huge upside potential of Intel. It's a $30 stock going to make $30 stock making $2.64. So that tells you it's fairly inexpensive. The five-year PE range is 8 to 17, and it'll be about, 11 PE based on next year's earnings? So, it's in the middle price range. The stock has fallen recently, and that's probably due to, probably more the market than the company itself. I don't think it was driven by what's happening with the company. It's more the market. So you really want to buy this when it's on sale. And I say if it gets into the $27 range, $26 to $28, I think that'd be a really good place to buy it if it goes there. It will correct if the market corrects. And if you're going to buy for that dividend, that's pretty solid at 3.5%. It's not, and it's easy for them to pay that. It's very well within their ability to increase dividends. And they have done it in the last couple of years every year. So I don't have information going further. So probably done it more than that, but I can't see it on my screens. So I like the company, Intel. If you want a big blue chip that pays a high dividend, so you just buy it when it's on sale. And you'll do fine. Intel, INTC, everybody. INTC. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Well, we're going to talk about the difference between ETFs and mutual funds and try to get you to understand the pros and cons of them. Because everybody's moving to ETFs thinking that's the way to go and not mutual funds. And to be perfectly honest, that's not necessarily correct thinking. And I want to go over some of the reasons why. It's not bad. It's not a terrible thing. I like ETFs a lot better than mutual funds, but for different reasons than maybe other people do. Because I like to control what sectors I want to be in. I don't care about the individual stocks picked in a normal mutual fund. I care about, because I can pick individual stocks, I care about the sectors or the place in the marketplace out there in the world that I want to be. Maybe I want to be in a foreign country. You could do that easy with an ETF. Maybe I want to do something that's not related to the stock market, maybe currencies. Well, I can easily do that with ETFs. I can't do that with individual currencies, and it's harder to do that with mutual funds. It's doable. This is Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Mike in Alameda. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thank you, Steve. I'd like to get your thoughts on Amgen. What do you think?
Take a look at Amgen. Do you own it or do you want to buy it?
Both. I just took a position in it, and I'm thinking about adding to it.
Perhaps. Okay. Amgen had a nice day today, up $2.22 to $155.41. So had a nice day. They're going to make $11.13. That's up 7% from last year. This year, they're going to make $11.13. Next year, $12.14. Another 9% increase in earnings. Sales are increasing anywhere from averaging around 10% growth in sales per quarter. And therefore, it makes the stock inexpensive. Because if you're looking at it, it's what? If it's going to make $12 and it's a $155 stock, I mean, that means that the stock is probably worth closer to $200 than it is $155. So it's kind of inexpensive. And meanwhile, it's 2.6% dividend. Amgen, everybody, develops therapeutics based on cellular, molecular biology to treat cardiovascular and inflammation diseases. It's a $116 billion company. So, Mike, you got to look at it as a big blue chip stock now. I will say it's been in a range for a year, you know, trading range, with a low about 132 and a high about 176. So I would think if you're going to add to your position, I would rather see you add to it in the 140s, like 140, 145, somewhere in there. Lots of support there, so if it goes down there. Right now, it's kind of in between the peak and the valley. So I don't know if I'd add to it right here. But if the market corrects, it'll correct with it, and that would be a great time to add to it because it's a solid, solid company. Solid.
To me, this is like I'm viewing this as a long-term holding, you know. more than 10 years, hopefully.
Yeah, most likely it will do very well over that length period of time. It'll do very well. It's a good core holding. And so whenever I talk about core holding, Mike, I always say, well, it's a good core holding. Therefore, you want to buy it at a good, reasonable price and just be patient. Don't be over anxious. I think you'll get a better price sometime this summer. And that's what I pick
very
up.
Very good. I do.
I'll pick up the other.
I appreciate your advice.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the call. Really. Amgen, everybody, a very good company. AMGN. I don't see how anybody could say it's not a great company. I mean, they have consistently raised their earnings year after year after year, consistently grown their sales. I mean, it's hard to keep growing a company that's $116 billion. It's hard to keep growing them. And they've been very good at it. So, cannot complain. You have to say, okay, if there's one of those blue chippers that seem like a sensible buy. ETFs. Let's talk about ETFs. And we'll compare, you know, we compared ETFs and mutual funds, and I'm going to think I'm doing a bit more of that after the break. But how about just plain old ETFs? What are some of the things you should do about buying? What are some ideas? What are the rules? What should you do? Well, first of all, you can find ETFs almost anywhere. Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Vanguard, TD Ameritrade, they all have ETFs, produce them. So you can buy them through there. There's a huge number of them out there that could do almost anything. And so you have to look at them. And you really have to understand what you own in an ETF. Most of them track an index or sector of the market. They also can track a foreign country's market. They can do different kinds of tracking. They can track precious metals or almost any commodity out there. So what they are, they're very specific, very transparent in what they do. That's better than most mutual funds. The transparency in ETF is better, in my personal opinion. Besides, also, you know, ETFs are a little cheaper. You still have to look at what they do and make sure they do what they say they're going to do. And don't expect... I'm worried that people treat ETFs like stocks. Well, they're not really stocks. They're groups of stocks, sectors of stocks, you know, or an index. So you got to treat them. They're not individual stocks. ETFs are a great way for a small investor to diversify. It really is a good way to do it. I like ETFs. I think it's a good option for a lot of reasons. Okay, but you still have to know what you're doing. Don't think you can just, I'll just buy an ETF. Unless you're going to buy an index fund, put it away for 10 years and not look at it, okay. Then I'll agree with you. You can do that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. We're going to, in the next half hour, we're going to talk about those that cell signal that's very strong, but it's only happened twice in 20 years. And does the stock market guide the Federal Reserve policy? There's a study out that kind of hints that it might. And what are some of the other non-dividend income investments you could try? That's our talking points for the next half hour. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You can see my portfolio check updates on investtalk.com. I'll be in San Ramon on the 11th. That's this week. This Wednesday, exactly. And then San Jose, May 25th. So to reserve your spot for a one-hour informal meeting, just go to investtalk.com, and click on the Invest Talk tab. And we'll talk with Joe in Washington next.
We thank you for subscribing. If you'd like to take Steve up on his offer, it's really pretty easy. He meets with a limited number of our podcast subscribers via Skype and telephone. This is a way to benefit from his experience, get his views on your retirement portfolio, and give you some ideas if you'd like. It can be a very educational hour. To set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. We continue now with this Monday, May 9th Invest Talk. Why not share your investing journey with us? We'd love to hear about your investment choices, lessons learned. Call and join in the conversation. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Joe in Washington. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I love
the
show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I had a question regarding one of two options. I was considering allocating about $3,000 of my portfolio into gold, and I was thinking of either putting $1,000 each into Goldcorp, Barrick Gold, and Newmont Mining, which I just looked up are the top three gold companies in the world, or I was thinking of putting all $3,000 into Vanguard Precious Metals. There's a $75 fee for Vanguard Precious Metals, which works out to be about 2.5% of your investment. I know it's less risky, but wanted to see which option you would take with allocating $3,000 to gold, or if any of those options.
Okay, is the Vanguard Precious Metal, do they invest in just gold mining companies?
No, I think it's gold and other metals as well.
Okay. And are they all mining companies? Silver mining, gold mining, molybdenum mining, copper mining?
I think, are you talking about just Vanguard Precious Metals?
Yes.
Yeah, it's my belief that they do more than just gold.
Okay. So then you probably won't have the pure play on gold as you might have on individual mining companies. We happen to own Barrick Gold in our managed portfolios, our stock managed portfolio. We have like five exposures and gold mining companies, and I'll say gold and silver, not only just gold, but because we do have a silver position.
Yeah, okay.
So I would say that you would probably do better if you bought the three mining companies, but you would also be more volatile, Joe. And if you're okay with more volatility, you would go, but the more volatility with a more possible upside, you go with the three mining companies. With less volatility, and still upside potential, go with the mutual because they'll have a lot more positions. And some will be good, some will be bad. But if gold goes up, they all will go up. Okay?
So do you think it's a decent time to invest in gold, or should I wait for a little pullback?
I'd probably wait for a little pullback. We bought gold last year. We got in too early, started buying it last year, and kept buying it up until January of this year. And then it started moving in January. Now it's had a pretty good move. I still think it has a pretty good ways to go, but I probably would wait for a little bit of pullback. I think I would. Joe, appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Good luck. I hope it
works
for you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for listening. I appreciate
that. Thank you.
Let's go to Dan in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Dan?
Hi, Steve. Good. Good to talk to you again. Yeah, I think it had a little pullback today, actually. It started one.
Yeah, it did.
It'd be nice if it kept going.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about VLO, Valero. Now, I bought some. It's gone down about 8% since I bought it, half position.
Okay. It looks to me like it's getting awful close to a lot of support down there around $53, $54 a share. I mean, that's a lot of support in that area. So it should hold very close to where it is. If gold, if oil doesn't fall apart. Valero, everybody, of course, is the, it's in the refinery side of the oil company. It's a $25 billion company. I don't think you have any worries about the dividend. The dividend is going to be very solid at 4.4%. I don't think that's a problem. And it's a pretty low-priced stock with a current PE of 7, and that PE is, their earnings are going to go up again. They're going to go down this year from last year and then bounce next year. So the PE is going to be more like 8, maybe 9, which is still very low. Okay? So I don't know if I'd be anxious to sell it yet, Dan. I would not.
Okay. Yeah, I've lost money on it. I bought it around 60, but I'm just going to wait.
Yeah, I think unless it breaks below 50, let's call it 52. If it breaks below that, then I'm not sure where it's going to end up. But it would be very surprising if it doesn't hold in here. And it's because oil's falling too, you know. I mean, the oil prices are finally falling a little bit. But I think you'll get that 4.4% dividend. it's pretty nice. Dan, thanks for the call. I'd hold on to it at this point. I would.
Let's hang on to it. Okay, Steve.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. If it broke the 52, I might make another decision, but I'd wait till it does that. Let's go to Jessica in Mountain View. How are you doing, Jessica?
Doing great. Thank you for the show, Steve.
Thank you.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
I have an IRA. I'm thinking of buying a rental property in that. Is this a good idea? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with buying rental property, and you can use an IRA to do so. But there's some specific rules, Jessica. You just can't go out and buy real rental property with your IRA money. You can't do that. You have to set up a special IRA to do that. So be very, very careful with the rules. You got to be very careful, because if you violate the rules, the IRS is going to say you took out all the money and they're going on income tax on it. So there's nothing wrong with buying real estate. And where you are, which is in the Silicon Valley area, real estate is extremely expensive, but I think it's a good market to be in. And I do like real estate as something to help diversify a portfolio. In other words, if you want to buy real estate to have a different source of income rather than being in the stock market or bond market, I think it's good to have diversification. It's one of the reasons why, Justin became a broker, because we felt, we had to help people with real estate questions and maybe help them find real estate if they want to buy real estate. So, no, nothing wrong with it, Jessica. Just be very careful in an IRA how you buy it, because you gotta have a certain kind of IRA to do that. Okay? Thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is it time to downsize, upgrade your property? I think about that. I'm thinking about that in my own house. Time to downsize? Am I ready to downsize? Or should I fix it up? And should I fix it up to downsize? Should I consider reverse mortgage? It's not for me, I don't think, because I don't need it. Justin Klein, along with Chevy Atkinson, who heads an award-winning realtor team, will be offering real estate reviews by Skype or telephone May 12th. That's this Thursday. So, Jessica, if you want to call in and talk to them, you can do that. To reserve your time, just click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Review. So that's at investtalk.com. So go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin and write Real Estate Review, and he'll be in touch with you.
You hear Steve talk about portfolio checkups. You can always see his schedule on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon this week, May 11th, and then San Jose, May 25th. For podcast listeners and others out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone to schedule your time. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and talk to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
Good evening. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening.
I'm trying to maybe attempt to better understand PE ratio, for example.
Okay.
Better evaluate, PE ratios in relation to whether or not a stock is suitable or sensible to buy at a certain level. Like, for example, a stock that is worth, say, $14. Mm-hmm. How to determine if it's undervalued or overvalued by looking at the PE ratio.
Okay, that's a very good question. It's not nearly as simple as people think it is. Well, just buy something with a low PE ratio. Okay, that means a price compared to the earnings is low. Well, I wish it was that simple. If it was that simple, everybody in the world would do it, and everybody would be rich, won't they, in the stock market. But it's not that simple. And that's a very good question, James, because PE ratios are commonly misunderstood in their application. For instance, you need to start with an understanding of the overall market PE ratio, which is around, historically, about 15. But when it's a low inflationary environment, the PE ratio for the overall market is higher, 16, 17. When it's a high inflationary environment, the PE ratio is lower. So there's different rules. And then you got to go by sectors. High growth companies generally have higher PE ratios. So the tech sector generally has a higher average PE ratio, more like 18 or 19. This is overall. I'm talking about in general, James. Now, when we start to, and of course, mining companies and old companies, their PE ratios are usually lower. Now, so you can't say, well, I'm going to compare Ford's PE ratio with the PE ratio of Netflix. It makes absolutely no sense. And you can't say, well, I'm going to compare it with the overall market to 15. That makes no sense either. You have to compare the PE ratio of the auto industry with an auto company. And you got to compare the E, and that's why you hear me, James, say, what has been the 5-year average range of this company's PE ratio? Because you also got to compare it with the range that it has been in for years. Then add into that, James, always when you're looking at a PE ratio, look at forward estimated earnings, not backward, not current, not the most recent 12 months. Forward estimated PE for next year. You want to look at earnings for next year and then apply the PE ratio.
And why is that?
Because that's what everybody does in the industry. And it's that simple, James. It's what I do as a professional. That's what every other professional does. He looks at forward-looking earnings, even though those earnings could be totally wrong, James. Could be totally wrong. But that's how we invest. Oh, look at that company. It's in a high growth industry. It's growing very nicely. And next year, it's going to make X. We don't talk about what it made last year. We don't care. We want to care what it's going to make next year. So if I care and all the professionals care, James, you have to care. Look forward, not backward. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. I wish it was easy. I wish it was easy for me. And again, PE is just one thing to look at. It's a good thing to look at, but it's just one. You also got to look on profit margins, return on equity, return on assets. You got to look at the competition, the environment, the economic cycle that you're in favors certain types of industries over other industries, depending on where you are in the economic cycle. On and on and on. That, of course, what makes it fun, but it also makes it hard. But that's our job, is it not? It's your job, too. Okay, this is a signal, a sell signal. I tried to bring in both sell and buy signals and try not to be too downer, even though I feel the market should correct sometime this summer. I don't want to be too much of a downer because you never know. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. But I do like to look at different technical aspects of the market and fundamental aspects and then go back in history and say, well, what happened the previous time? So in the last 20 years, this thing has happened twice. And what this thing is I'm looking at the 100-week moving average and the 50-week moving average. And it's only happened twice that the 50-week moving average went down through the 100-week moving average. And the two times that it happened was March of 2000 and June of 2008. Do you know what happened to the market after those two times? The market tanked both times. Now, this is the problem with looking at this statistic. This is not statistically valid. It's only two data sets. Two. That is nothing. If you talk to a mathematician and say, well, I got two data sets, and so let's extrapolate from there, he would laugh at you. So you can't just take this and say, oh, well, this is what's going to happen. No, no. All I'm doing is reporting the news here. This happened twice in 20 years, and both times the market tanked afterwards. Now, what happened in 2000? Well, we had the dot-com bubble. What happened in 2008? Well, we had the housing bubble. What do we have today? Are we in a bubble? Are we in a bubble? You might say we're in a debt bubble. The government has way more than debt. But we can't say that. We can't really say that, can we? What kind of other devil? Can you say you're in a housing bubble? Well, maybe in San Jose you are, but not the rest of the country. Maybe you could. Okay, can we say that we're in a financial bubble of some kind? Well, I can tell you that I think the market's overvalued because the P.E. ratios over the overall market, which we just discussed, instead of being 15, which is a long-term average, it's closer to 18 with earnings going down. See, so you got to look at more than just one thing, two things. You got to look at a bunch of things. And even then, you don't know. I have no crystal ball, people. Nobody does. So don't believe what all these pundits, you read an article and this, oh my God, that's the one I'm going to read about this or that going up or down. They don't know either. No one knows. I wish we knew, but you don't. What can you do? You can compare previous times with this time and say, well, the probability is this. That's why I could easily say, I think the market's going to correct this summer. Why? Because the probability. It often corrects during the summer. Very often. And the middle two quarters of the year are usually the weakest two quarters of the year. So it's very easy for me to say, over historically, it looks like that's happened. And I think it'll probably happen again, it seems. But that's as close as I can get to saying what the market's going to do. That's it. I wish it was better. You're listening to Invest Talk. Our number is 888-99-CHART. Give me a call. Okay, let's go talk to Jim in Indiana. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Steve?
I'm good. I thank you for waiting. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the show. Hey, questions about Chevron today. A lot of news about oil with the Canadian wildfires and then the situation out, you know, with the Saudi oil. I don't even remember what its title is exactly, but he changed.
Right.
And you know, and I feel like there's a lot of volatility right now. That there was an attack on a Chevron facility abroad, and so I'm really looking hard and thinking about selling the news, as it were. Mm-hmm. But you know, today was not a good day for Chevron. So
you own Chevron right now, Jim?
I do own it right now, yep.
Okay, so do we. We bought it months ago. And both our stock program, which we're looking for growth, and our income program, which we're looking for income but possible growth as well. And I have to admit that we sold it in our stock program last week. CVX, everybody, Chevron. That doesn't mean I don't like the company. Okay. We have other oil companies. I didn't sell any of those. But we've done so well in Chevron since the beginning of the year, we took some profits off the table because we felt oil at 45 plus a barrel and some of the things you've mentioned that maybe it would be smart to pocket some profits in Chevron right now. And if it goes back down, guess what? I'll be buying it right back. I like it as a long-term hold also because when we bought it, we were getting close to 5% dividend. In my income program, it's hard to find those things. So it's hard for me to sell it, even though if I think that maybe the price will go down. But I also think oil prices, we've seen the bottom. And over the long haul, they're going to go back to, you know, $45 to $55 a barrel. I think that's where they're going to be. Maybe $60 long term. I think that's probably where they'll be. But who knows? So if you're thinking about taking profits, I see nothing wrong with that.
Okay, so if I'm interpreting what you're saying, if I'm thinking about a long-term hold, just hold on to it, everything will be fine, they will weather this storm like everything else.
Yep.
Or if I want to take some profits, just do it now, look for something else, look for another opportunity.
Boy, you said it better than I said it. So maybe you should do this radio show, Jim.
No, sir. Thank you, though.
No, that's exactly what I think. You've hit it right on the head there. I exactly think if you're long-term and it has that really nice dividend, just ignore those little wiggles and waggles. Short-term, I think it might be a good idea to take some off the table, pocket some profit. Okay?
All right.
Thank you
very much, Steve. Appreciate the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Does the stock market guide the Federal Reserve policy? In other words, if the stock market goes up or down, are they moving their policy in reaction to the stock market? I'll give you an example. They moved up the interest rates in December, right? December, only a quarter point. The market crashed in January. Okay, as soon as it crashed or after it crashed, all of a sudden they talked about, well, maybe we're not going to be in a big hurry to move rates up. But before that, they were thinking about four times this year. So UBS did a study, and their conclusion was, it certainly looks like it. Remember, what is the Federal Reserve's mandate? Maximum employment and stable prices. They have a dual mandate, and sometimes those two things conflict. They can't do both at the same time. So they want employment and no inflation, or deflation for that matter. And you can't really blame them because remember the stock market itself is a leading economic indicator. And if it crashes, that may mean that the whole economy could follow it and go into recession. Well, meaning the Federal Reserve, supposed to try to prevent them or to have them not be so deep. So maybe they're justified in keeping an eye on the stock market. It's not so simple for them either. Everybody, if I can leave you with one message, it's not easy. Okay, our time is up. If you have a question you want to ask me directly, you're welcome to send me a note. And I will get back to you, I promise. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I really make an effort to get back to you. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. And let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.